Hey, has lichen sclerosis messed with your relationships? You know, partner, family, friends, even at work? Then you need to join us at the Holistic Healing Summit this May 13th to the 17th, because we're bringing all the experts. We're going to be talking about intimacy, sex, as well as how do you talk to your family, friends, provider, boss? All of those things. And this is a free event, live, virtually, so you can catch it anywhere in the world, May 13th to the 17th, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. We've got sessions going on all day. Get more information at lssupportnetwork.org/WHS. That's lssupportnetwork.org/WHS.
Hey, welcome. Thank you for coming to listen to the Lichen Sclerosis Podcast. My name is Kathy, and this is our journal of learning about and living with lichen sclerosis. Each week, I either research or speak to someone about an aspect of lichen sclerosis and bring you the information so you don't have to go searching. I bring you the real talk without the medical jargon. This week, we're going to talk with Heather Cohen once again. If you haven't checked out Heather Cohen's diagnosis story, I sincerely encourage you to go do that because it's amazing. The previous two episodes are her story detailing how for 25 years, the medical industry let her down and her lichen sclerosis unfortunately formed into vulva cancer. But she didn't let that hold her down, and she advocated for herself and was able to heal her cancer and her lichen sclerosis through the use of naturopathic therapy. Her journey through vulvar cancer gave her the desire to pay it forward, which led her to find the field of nutrition and ultimately become a certified nutrition therapy practitioner and a functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner. And today she's going to walk us through what exactly that means, what do they do for us, and how changing our environment and working on our hormones and finding our triggers, how all of that can help us heal our LS. So if you've ever heard of leaky gut or hormones or food sensitivities, and you've been wondering, how can those things help me? How can I heal myself? This is the episode for you, because Heather's going to give you specifics and she's going to break it all down for us. Before we get into our conversation with Heather, I want to thank our sponsor, the Lichen Sclerosis Support Network. It's a group of creators bringing awareness, resources, education, and most importantly, hope to people with LS. Find out more information about them at the end of the episode. And now for my conversation with Heather Cohen.
This information is for educational purposes and does not constitute medical advice. Speak to your medical provider before making any changes to your care.
What exactly does a nutrition therapist do?
Sure. You can think as a nutrition therapist as a health coach. Okay. So we are a non-licensed professional that works alongside you and your licensed professional to help you with dietary change and lifestyle change to complement whatever treatment plan you are going through with your doctor and to help you reach your goals in terms of health. We focus a lot on nutrition because unfortunately, conventional professionals, at least in the medical world, are not really versed in nutrition. Mm-hmm. We have the dietary guidelines that are put out by the FDA, and we've got some slants on that from the American Heart Association and the American Diabetes Association, but that's all government run. Okay. And depending on who you talk to, someone may argue there's a little bit more industry involvement there than there should be. But that's really where it stops in terms of nutrition education for the layman. And then on the conventional side, we do have dietitians and nutritionists there, okay. But they're usually working in a clinical setting and they're working directly alongside those guidelines.
Okay. What's the difference between a nutrition therapist and a dietitian? Because I've heard of a dietitian before. I've actually worked with one when my daughter was young. They told us like to have her eating certain foods and they gave us some recipes and things like that might encourage her to eat more. So what's the difference between a dietitian who's giving you more, telling you what to eat and giving you recipes and a nutrition therapist?
Sure. You just described a dietitian. They work clinically and they're actually providing you with tools that align with whatever it is you're trying to solve from a medical perspective. Mm-hmm. A nutritional therapist like myself, we actually approach the body from a holistic perspective. We're looking at function of the entire body and where things are out of balance and how we can make changes nutritionally and through lifestyle change to correct those imbalances. And a lot of what I do actually comes down to identifying stressors that are pulling the body out of balance and then mitigating those stressors. So when you think of stress, a lot of people think like traffic and bills and kids running all over the place. And there's the mental and emotional stress. And yes, that's a component. But then there's hidden stressors, things that we don't ever think about, like infections or food sensitivities or nutritional deficiencies or environmental toxins, heavy metals. There's a lot of other things that are hidden from like a standard approach. And a lot of these things are just not taken into consideration in standard medicine on the conventional side. And so sometimes it helps to work with both someone from the holistic perspective. Whether it be a naturopath, I overlap a lot with what a naturopath does. They're obviously licensed and can prescribe in a lot of areas. Okay. I don't diagnose, I don't treat. Basically, I'm coaching you through how to identify where your body's out of balance, what's causing that shift, and trying to get it back into balance.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So then do you do any kind of test or how do you identify those stressors?
I use research labs. So you go to your doctor and oftentimes they'll order lab work because they're trying to find a diagnosis for you. Right. In the conventional medical system, diagnosis is really important because it's those diagnosis codes that go to your insurance mm-hmm. to help with your coverage. So diagnosis is a real big part of the conventional treatment, but I'm not licensed, so I don't diagnose. Instead, I'm using research labs to help you investigate what may be out of balance in your body. So then you can make changes nutritionally and lifestyle related to put those things back into balance. So the types of labs that I'm looking at are going to be more urine, saliva, stool. I do some blood as well. Obviously, I don't draw blood. I would send you in for that. But we're looking at things like food sensitivities. They're a big one. We're looking at leaky gut or intestinal permeability. We can test for that. Sometimes we're testing neurotransmitters to see where you're at in terms of mental health. Oftentimes, we're looking at hormones through saliva or dried urine in terms of where you sit, not just your sex hormones, but the other hormones that are involved in everything in your body as well. Stuff like cortisol. Cortisol is the big stress hormone. So when you're stressed out, you produce cortisol. And if that pathway is not working correctly, it can lead to other imbalances in other hormones. So that's what I'm looking at.
If you have this baseline, how do you determine it? Or is it like, okay, if I'm a 42-year-old female, then this is where I should be. Or you're a 30-year-old male, then this is where you should be. Is it that stringent or is it more individualized?
Both. So on a lot of the labs, myself and other practitioners who have gone through my certification programs have done so many labs that we have ideal ranges, just like any other conventional practitioner. Like when you go to your doctor, they probably have a range that they'd like to see you in terms of cholesterol and the things that they measure, blood sugar, glucose, A1C. So we've also developed these same standard ranges. And it's a combination of what the lab has collected. So the individual labs themselves, because even in conventional lab work, the lab range that the lab gives you is based on everyone who's ever taken that test mm-hmm. in terms of what's normal and what's abnormal. So if the entire population is low, then low is normal. It's a combination of what the lab has gathered or accumulated from their population of test subjects, as well as myself and my colleagues and our client caseload. And then it really is broken down by age. So a postmenopausal woman is going to have different ranges on a lot of her steroid or sex hormones versus a menstruating woman, for example.
Okay. Specifically dealing with lichen sclerosis, are there certain imbalances?
Yes, absolutely. I deal with all autoimmunity, not just LS. Obviously, I specialize in LS because that's my own story. But when it comes to autoimmunity, there's a very specific kind of theory or methodology that I work off of. Okay. It's called the three-legged stool theory. So when it comes to autoimmunity, there are three things that really have to be in place for autoimmunity to develop. And there's data on this. So one, there usually is a genetic component. And then there's a disruption to the microbiome. The microbiome is all the little critters that live in your gut. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then the third is a trigger of some sort, okay, like an environmental trigger of some kind. You can test your genes and you can do things like if you have access to 23andMe data or Ancestry.com data, you can run the raw data through a website called geneticgenie.com. It will give you a printout of known genetic markers. For example, I have a mutation in my COM-T gene. COM-T is a methylation pathway in detoxification, and it helps you actually get rid of excess hormones. So because my gene that regulates getting rid of excess hormones is broken, that means that I hang on to things like estrogen for too long. So I have a tendency to be estrogen dominant. There's a whole cascade of things that happen there, and it can also lead to disruption in the immune system. So that's the genetic component. So that's how you figure that out. You can run through there. Another really common genetic mutation is MTHFR, which is another methylation pathway that has to do with B vitamins and how you break them down and store them and how they're utilized. And all of these things can contribute. And then there's the microbiome portion, which is usually leaky gut or intestinal permeability, which a lot of people have heard about these days.
Yes. What is leaky gut? Because I hear leaky gut this, and you got to heal your leaky gut that, and I can help you heal your leaky gut, and that's going to cure your LS. What the heck is leaky gut? Please.
All right. The official term is intestinal permeability. So your gut, think of it like a hose. And on the inside of that hose is basically your gut lining or the cell wall. The hose itself, like that actual wall, is only one cell thick. So when people say 70%+ of your immune system is in your gut, it's not actually in your gut, but it's hanging around your gut because that cell wall is only one cell thick.
We say gut. Are you talking about your intestines?
Yes, okay. Not the stomach, but past the stomach, usually the small intestine.
Okay.
So that's one cell thick. So your immune cells, the bulk of them, are hanging out around that cell wall to catch anything that comes through it that shouldn't be coming through it because it's only one cell thick.
Okay.
So that cell wall is composed of these little finger-like projections that are like, think of a hose and they're pointing in towards the hose. They're okay. Called villi. And they've got little hairs on top of them as well called a brush border. So when these guys are healthy, they're erect and they're moving around and everything is good to go. Okay. When they're not healthy, because maybe you're eating things that are irritating them, or maybe you've gone through a lot of stress, stress will hurt these guys, they start to droop. And when they droop, there are openings in between those little fingers called tight junctions. Mm-hmm. Those tight junctions are no longer tight. If these guys are, they call it atrophied. So they start to droop and they're not active. When that happens, those tight junctions are left open. And then anything that's inside of your gut can then leak into your bloodstream. Okay. The immune system, being the immune system, is looking out for anything that's not supposed to be in your blood. So right. If that hamburger you ate is in your gut and then it leaks out into your blood, now your immune system is going to attack those hamburger particles, and that causes systemic inflammation. And if it happens for too long, your immune system is revved up chronically. And okay. When the immune system is revved up chronically, it starts to get confused and it will start attacking things that it shouldn't be attacking.
Hence an autoimmune disease.
Exactly. So that's what leaky gut is. And that's oftentimes we're dealing with leaky gut. If it's not leaky gut, we're dealing with an imbalance in microbiota. So the bugs that live in your gut, there's good bugs and then there's opportunistic bugs that shouldn't be there. So usually or sometimes there's an imbalance. There can also be pathogens in there, yeast. There's some sort of disruption in the gut microbiome. Leaky gut happens to be a big one, but it's not always the case. So one of the labs that I run is a GI map where I have you poop in a box. And we run the stool through the lab and they're looking for all of the microbiota. So do you have enough good bugs? Do you have a okay number of bad bugs? Do you have any pathogens? Do you have any parasites? Do you have any candida overgrowth? Like those are the things that we're looking for to make sure that the gut is healthy. And one thing I run into quite often is a bacteria called H. pylori, which the literature is a little bit conflicting in whether it's supposed to be there or not supposed to be there. But when it gets to be too much H. pylori in the system, then it starts to actually wear on the stomach lining. It can affect your stomach acid levels, which then can affect how you're breaking down your food and your nutrients, which could lead to deficiencies and a lot of other issues. So there's a lot of stuff that can happen in the gut, but the gut is always one of those legs in the stool.
So the first leg of the stool is looking for mutated genes. The second leg of the stool is the microbe, making sure that you have enough of the good microbes and not too many of the bad microbes. And the third leg of the stool is triggers. So let's talk about triggers.
Yeah, so this is where things get really interesting. Genes are easy because you just run them through these databases and it'll let you know where you have a disruption in your genes. Gut is pretty easy because we can run a GI map and there you go. We know what's what. When it comes to triggers, this is the area of the additional stress that's different for every single person. And there are six big buckets in terms of triggers. And for those of you that are looking to take notes, I do have a worksheet for you that has all of this out laid out. So if you can find it at heathercoen.com/LS podcast. And I'm sure Kathy will put the link in the show notes for you.
Absolutely.
So the six buckets, the first one is food sensitivities. That happens to be my bucket. That's my root cause in terms of my lichen sclerosis and my Hashimoto's. Turns out I'm allergic to dairy and gluten. There's a difference in terms of the term allergic versus sensitive or intolerant. It just really has to do with the type of antibodies your body is making. Usually allergies are more on the anaphylactic side, right? Like a peanut allergy, it's a little bit more serious. You might get hives. I get a lot of hay fever type symptoms. And then intolerances, there are a lot of different types of intolerances, but they're usually not immediate. They're usually like if I have cheese today, maybe tomorrow I'll wake up mucusy versus a peanut, which may like kill me today. There won't be a tomorrow. Does that make sense?
Got it.
So we test for food sensitivities. So I use a lab called the MRT or the mediated release test. And we're looking at 170 different foods. And we're basically looking for your body to produce what's called a mediator. We're not looking at specific antibodies. We're looking at, are you producing histamine to those? Are you having a histamine reaction, like an actual immune function? Are you producing more white blood cells according to the sample? That's your immune system engaging and jumping in. We can absolutely test for antibodies as well, but this particular test is a little bit more comprehensive because it looks at all the mediators that are released. So food sensitivities is one bucket. That's a big one. It's very common.
So how exactly is that done? Do you have to like taste every food or like?
That's a great question, actually.
170 different food types. I'm going to be fat just after the test.
Yeah, that was a good question. Actually, it's a blood test. This one is.
So okay.
Send you into a clinic, get a blood draw, and then we mail it in. So all of the lab work I do is based on self-directed labs. So these are labs that I'm not ordering them for you like a doctor orders them. I'm just shipping you the lab kits and you're actually taking the samples at home and filling out the information and sending it to the lab. And then I'm working with a doctor on my end for expert interpretation to work you through what they mean and how we can apply them in a customized plan for you. So it's all self-directed. So if there's ever a blood draw required, there are standalone clinics that we send you to actually get a blood draw.
Is there a margin of error? Like with some of these tests, I would imagine not everybody is going to do them perfectly.
Yes.
Other than the blood test, though, I guess what you said, you poop in a box and you pee in a cup. So, you know, might swab your mouth with a toothpick.
Yeah. Or sometimes there's a blood drop. So you like prick your finger with a pin and put it on a card. So as long as you're
fairly simple.
They're very simple. As long as you're not contaminating them or you're being careful not to contaminate them best you can, they're usually pretty accurate. Food sensitivity testing is kind of controversial because there are some tests where you have to be eating the food in order for the reactions to show up. There are some tests where you don't. I like the MRT because you don't. And then it's a matter of arguing about, well, antibodies develop to dairy anyway, and maybe I'm not allergic. And so there's a lot of that. So the way that we interpret the labs, or at least I do, is I'm looking for patterns. Oxalates are a really big topic.
Yes.
The lichen sclerosus.
Another one. Low oxalate diet. No, don't be eating the spinach. I love spinach. I'm about to go have some spinach in a sandwich now.
And oxalates don't bother me either. Like, they don't bother everyone. It's not a universal thing. It's not a, if you have LS or vulvodynia, you absolutely have an oxalate intolerance. That's not a tried and true connection. But what we're looking at for the MRT is if I see a bunch of foods that show up like spinach and almonds and chocolate.
Okay.
Those are all high oxalate foods. So maybe we will test removing high oxalate foods from your diet and adding in foods that help break down oxalate to see if that affects your symptoms at all. So I'm looking for patterns. Nightshades are another one. If peppers and nightshades, there's a family of vegetables called nightshade vegetables. They include potatoes, peppers, tomatoes, ashwagandha is another one that's in there. So if I see a lot of those showing up, then maybe we need to try removing nightshade vegetables from your diet and see if that affects your symptoms. So every single person reacts to different things. And so we're looking for patterns. And so we just test, take these things out for 1 week and then have something and see if it makes any difference. And you'll be able to tell whether or not the test is accurate in terms of a reaction of some kind.
So 1 week without these things, not 30 days, not,
well, you know, hang on.
6 months.
That's just testing the validation of the test.
Oh, Heather, you had me. I was like, all right, let's test me. Let's see. You about to take all my food away. Girl got to eat now.
I know.
All right, go ahead.
That's just validating the test. So at first, you want to remove the things that come back as yellow or red and validate the test and make sure they're right. Because things might show up, like if black pepper shows up and after a week you add black pepper in and you feel okay, maybe black pepper is not really a thing. And so there's a little bit of flexibility. It's not like when it comes back, we're going to get rid of everything. Because I've seen cases, especially when we're dealing with leaky gut, where there's like 100 foods on that list. I'm not going to take away everything. You got to eat something,
right? That's my issue with AIP, because I was all about to do AIP, and then I started looking into it, and I was like, I'm a fucking starve to death, okay?
You're absolutely right.
Literally, I don't eat fish, and it's like, okay, eat all the fish you want. I'm like, I don't eat fish. Right. You know, you taking everything away. And I was like, okay, I can't do AIP.
And that's why I do food sensitivity testing instead of elimination diets, because AIP is wonderful if you're reacting to one of the things that you're asked to eliminate.
Right.
I'm reactive to pork, and pork is not a problem on AIP. So if I had eliminated everything, but I kept the pork, then I'm a failure at AIP and it didn't help me. And so I see a lot of people, a lot of my clients actually come to me and they're like, I've tried paleo and AIP and keto, and I've tried every diet on the market and I'm still having issues. And then we run the MRT and it's like, well, looks like oranges are your problem. Let's try getting rid of citrus for a little while. Turns out that's what it was.
That's what it was. And for my listener, if you don't know what AIP is, it's the autoimmune paleo diet. A lot of women have gotten success on it. It's an elimination kind of diet. So you get rid of a lot of things for 30 days plus, and then you start putting things back to see what you have a reaction to. Heather's way is they're going to draw some blood, test it, see what your markers are. Then you're going to eliminate those things for a certain amount of time to get them out of your system, reintroduce them, and see if you have a reaction. It's a softer protocol than the AIP.
Right. Now, it's a little bit of a shortcut.
Yeah. Now, I always say you're going to pay with either time or money. What are these tests going to cost us? Are they covered by insurance?
Yeah. So some of the labs, depending on your HSA or FSA, you'll be able to use those funds to actually purchase the labs. So my fee is separate from the labs. You pay the labs directly based on what it is you're getting. They run anywhere from $130 for a test up to, I've seen, $500 for a test. It really depends on what it is you're testing and which lab we're going with. I have access to a lot of different labs, and there are usually different variations. Like, we're testing hormones, we can go with a Cadillac that's going to test everything, that's more like 300 range, or we can get something that's a little bit more simple, just the basics. And that's $120. It depends. It's when you start testing a lot of things that starts to add up.
Now, I have a lot of listeners that are not in the US, and thankfully, they have universal healthcare. Mm-hmm. Is nutrition therapist a thing that's like more US-based, or are there nutrition therapists all over the world?
Sure. There are nutrition therapists all over the world. I work with international clients. Sometimes I meet with folks at midnight, 4 a.m., whatever it takes in terms of where their time zone is. I have a couple in Australia that seems to be an area that's very interested in looking at the body in terms of root cause analysis versus just prescription-based medicine.
Okay.
So yeah, so anybody, you can find a practitioner anywhere. The labs that I'm able to utilize may change based on where you live. So New York, for example, is one state in the United States that doesn't do self-directed lab. There are some solutions that we can do there. Some of my clients in New York will go across the border into Canada just so that they can mail their stuff. Sometimes they will go to their doctor and work with their doctor with what's available within the conventional system, and we work together. We can make it work depending on what we need to get done.
Okay.
So on the food sensitivity thing, just to be clear, the protocol isn't you're only going to have to get rid of the stuff for 1 week and then you're good. The one week is just about validating the test. And then if we find that it is accurate that these things do bother you, then we want to get rid of them for amount of time to let the gut heal. So that's usually a minimum of 3 months. So
usually,
3 to 6 months is usually what I go with. Unless it's a severe case, then it may take longer. But in every single case, in my experience, you will be able to reintroduce and tolerate foods that you had previously eliminated. Maybe not all of them, but you will be able to add them back.
Awesome. I thought you were going to tell me you have a trigger to apples and then I have to give up apples for the rest of my life. I like apples and applesauce.
It's not forever. So you got to remember, we talked about leaky gut. And so it's the stuff that's inside your intestines that are getting into the bloodstream. So oftentimes what happens is the stuff that you eat on a regular daily basis gets into the bloodstream every day because those tight junctions are no longer tight. And so that's the stuff that you start to react to. So if you give the body a break and then you seal and heal the gut, then you don't have to worry about those things anymore. They're no longer getting into the bloodstream and all of that immune disrupt has calmed. And so those fires are out and you should be okay. There are a couple of instances. Dairy is the big one because your body, dairy and gluten both, your body actually makes antibodies and memory cells to these proteins. And so sometimes those two, you're not able to add back in. Like, it's a forever thing. So you just have to figure out what your worth it foods are. Is it worth it for me to go to a birthday party and have a piece of cake every once in a while? Maybe. That's on an individual basis.
Right. Yeah. Is that chocolate ice cream worth the stomach ache you're going to have later?
Right. So I work with a lot of substitutions. So ice cream is an easy one. There's all kinds of different milks now. Ice cream is easy.
Okay.
So we do a lot of substitutions. So that's the first trigger in the triggers. There's six of them. So there's one, food sensitivities. The next one is environmental toxins and heavy metals.
Okay.
So we accumulate heavy metals from a lot of different sources. I won't say the V word, but old school, some of the older women, that may be a thing. But usually it's for drinking out of aluminum cans and—
Wait, say the V word, because I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Vaccines. It's a controversial thing.
Oh.
The V word. The old ones used to have heavy metals in them, and so that's a source of accumulation.
Okay.
Amalgam fillings are another big source. If you had, as a kid, I had 10 amalgam fillings in my mouth. So that tore up my gut.
I didn't know
fish,
that.
If you eat a lot of ocean fish, so you're safe, Kathy, because you're not a fish eater.
No, only tuna.
But if you're big into a lot of specifically the ocean fish, then that's a source of heavy metal accumulation as well. And heavy metals, they just get in the body and they hang out. We don't always excrete them very well. And so we're looking for like a buildup. And so that particular test is a hair test. So we're looking at, you take a tiny little haircut, Doesn't have to be from your head. Usually it's from the nape of the neck, but wherever. And we're looking for how well you're excreting those heavy metals.
Okay.
And then there are binders and things, supplementation protocols in terms of getting rid of them if you do have excess in your system.
Okay.
And then there's environmental toxins, and that is the parabens and junk that's in your makeup and your shampoo and your lotion or your cleaning products, whether or not you use chemicals in your job. One of my clients is a home cleaner. She has a home cleaning business. And so she is elbow deep in bleach every single day. The environmental toxins here were a big deal for her. And we had to figure out creative methods of protection for her at work so that we could cut down on the exposure of that bleach. And that's how she was able to actually figure out why her hormones were out of balance and get her autoimmunity figured out.
That's insane. So
that's the second bucket.
Would drugs be part of that bucket?
Medications fall in there, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, not even just medicated recreational drugs?
Yeah.
Yeah. All of that is in there. Okay.
Yes. Medical marijuana is a big deal right now, and a lot of actually recreational now that it's legal. So I'm in Arizona and it just became legal here. Mm-hmm. Recreationally, marijuana is fine. It's not inherently bad for you, but chronic use can affect your hormones and it also can affect your stress response. So it actually will pull down your cortisol, which is great if you're super strung out and stressed all the time, but chronic use, you won't be able to produce enough cortisol to meet the need when you are stressed out.
Oh, so you do need cortisol.
It's a natural response to stress. It's actually protective, but too much of it is not good. But also over time, you start to wear on your adrenal glands and they don't produce it like they should. And that then ends up cascading through the endocrine system. So that disrupts your estrogen and your progesterone and your testosterone and all of your sex hormones. And it just is a cascade from there.
So that's why you have low libido when you're chronically stressed or when you're stressed at all.
Yep. And I don't know if you've noticed, but there seems to be, just from years of hanging out in the groups and forums talking about LS with other women, there seem to be two predominant types of LS. One seems like the women who are figuring it out and their root causes for themselves. Okay. They feel like one is definitely autoimmune by one of these bucket triggers and the other is hormone driven. But we'll note hormone imbalance is another bucket when it comes to triggers for autoimmunity. So they're both not necessarily separate. They're tied together.
Okay.
So a sentiment that I see a lot in these groups is my LS happened after childbirth, happened after menopause, happened after insert major hormone disruption here. Mm-hmm. And so hormone imbalance is the next bucket in terms of triggers.
Okay.
So we test hormones and we're looking at normal ranges of steroid hormones, but we're looking at really the cortisol function because that's what disrupts all of yours and your stress, your ability to cope with stress. All right. Infections and parasites is another bucket. We talked about this a little bit. It's not just the microbiome, but a specific part of the microbiome in terms of candida, H. pylori, Enterobacter, E. coli. There's all kinds of things in terms of parasitic infections that you could end up with. And that's an easy one. That's the poop in the box test.
I would like if you have like worms, like I've seen, and this might be totally out there, but I've seen people have these really long worms in their intestines.
Tapeworms?
Yeah, the tapeworms that they're growing in there and you pull them out and they're like freaking 2 feet long.
Yeah, I've actually never seen one of those come back on a stool test, but yes, we're testing for those as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Most of the time it's a bacterial infection or candida, like a fungal overgrowth that we're dealing with. But I do deal with parasites. And when a GI map comes back and there's a parasitic infestation, then it's a matter of, okay, you got two routes. You can go to your doctor and you can get the hardcore prescription drugs to take care of it, or you can use what are called botanicals. So there are herbs and things that you can use to deal with it yourself. So I have my client make that decision. And then regardless of what they choose, we also do something called a biofilm breaker. So they take a supplement that breaks something called biofilm, which is what these bugs create so that they can hide and not get flushed out of the body. So if you don't do the biofilm, then those prescriptions that you take from the doctor may not completely eradicate whatever bug we're dealing with.
All right. Now I have a question that might be a dumb question, but you said you're looking for candida in the gut.
Now, we know with LS, a lot of women get chronic yeast infections. Is there any kind of correlation between yeast infections and candida in the gut?
Yes. So it can be. If there's a systemic infection, you're going to find it in the gut, and they may have recurrent chronic yeast infections as well of the vaginal type. I've also seen it show up in the mouth. I had a client that had real bad chronic both. She had vaginal candida and in the mouth, and it was in her gut. Like, it was just a systemic all over the place. Poor thing. We were able to clear all of that, which is great. She was having a hard time, especially on top of LS. No good. So it can be a systemic infection where you'll find it everywhere, including in the gut. Oftentimes, okay, if you are dealing with a chronic candida infection, it's a discrepancy in metals and minerals. Birth control has a tendency to deplete you of zinc. And when it comes to minerals, zinc and copper are tied together. So they need to be in balance. And if you don't have enough zinc, then you run the risk of copper toxicity. Copper toxicity is oftentimes what is behind those chronic yeast infections.
Okay.
So we're going to get to nutritional deficiencies as another bucket, another trigger. And oftentimes, if there's a chronic yeast issue, then I always ask, are you on birth control? Oftentimes, it's chronic use of birth control for 25 years. So we want to make sure the minerals are balanced, because oftentimes that's, it's as simple as just pulling down the copper and bumping up the zinc, and then they go away and you're good to go. We went over infections and parasites and the nutritional deficiencies. That's one. So that's one when it comes to candida. When it comes to autoimmunity, vitamin D is probably the most important deficiency that we're looking at.
Oh.
Everyone knows there's an epidemic of low vitamin D. Everyone's deficient. But the reason why vitamin D is so important is because it actually controls the mechanism of self-differentiation with your immune system. If you don't have enough vitamin D, your immune system has a difficult time deciding between what's you and what should be attacked as a foreign object. So every single one of my clients with any kind of autoimmunity, including LS, is deficient in vitamin D.
How much vitamin D should we be consuming on a regular basis?
Sure. So there's a little bit of concern in the documentation on this, like in the literature, because of the relationship between vitamin D and calcium. So if you end up with too much vitamin D, your body sometimes, it's rare, but it has happened, will start to deposit calcium in places it shouldn't, which can lead to issues. So if you are supplementing with vitamin D, please get your blood tested. You can go to any doctor and you can ask for a vitamin D to, like, where am I? Test my vitamin D levels and they'll let you know. And then based on the level of deficiency is really how you want to supplement.
Okay.
But the average person taking 10,000 IU a day should be fine. It shouldn't hurt you.
I'm going to write that down. Get vitamin D tested.
Yeah. So regardless of who you're working with, definitely get your vitamin D tested and make sure that they're good.
Okay.
Good in terms of the range. And for autoimmunity, and if you have a history of cancer, you want to be on the higher end of the range of vitamin D. So that's a big one.
Okay. And I think we got one more bucket left.
One more bucket is systemic inflammation. And that's just your body's on fire. And it can be from a lot of different reasons. Oftentimes, this is related to one of the other buckets.
Okay.
But for some reason, there's just inflammation. Oftentimes, I can source it back to either environmental toxins or food sensitivities or parasitic infections, but it could be Lyme disease. It could be a cofactor of Lyme disease. It could be Epstein-Barr. It can be, like, anything and everything can cause inflammation. It could be that you are going out and working yourself to death at the gym for 3 hours every day for the last 3 months. And so your body's just overworked and tired.
Interesting. I always thought inflammation was like a symptom of the LS, or it's a symptom of whatever is going on.
But it's both. So if you have localized inflammation, like you're talking about with, like, a knee injury or arthritis or even LS, that's a symptom of something is wrong in that area. But if you have body-wide systemic inflammation, where just the whole body is inflamed, measurable by lab markers, CRP, C-reactive protein.
Yeah. Every time I get my blood test, that is always high. They always tell me you have very high indicators for inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
So what do I need to do?
We got to look at the other buckets and we got to figure out what is causing that inflammation. I always look at food sensitivities first, because if you have a leaky gut, then you're going to have food sensitivities. So if we run the MRT and you come back with 50, 75, 100 food sensitivities, it's likely that you have intestinal permeability for sure. And so your gut is leaky. Anything you eat is getting into your bloodstream. So every day, unless you stop eating, you're going to be inflamed. Right. That's an easy fix in terms of let's get rid of the major offenders. Let's do a protocol to heal the gut, which involves supplementation, change in diet, lots of things like broth, collagen, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Get it all fixed. And then oftentimes it's as simple as that. It's not always that easy. Sometimes it's a combination. Like my client who has the cleaning business, she had a toxic overload for sure, but then she also found out that she was allergic to dairy. So then we had to address that. And then she also had a pretty big stress load in terms of like emotional, just normal stress, because she's got kiddos and she's got her own business, right, and she's just pulled in 50 million directions.
So how does all this correlate with, or does it have any correlation with pain?
It can. It absolutely can. If you have any kind of alignment issues and you're systemically inflamed, you will feel the pain a lot more. So I have an issue with my hip. My pelvis is crooked, and so my hip sometimes will bother me. If I eat something that I shouldn't, that I know that I'm sensitive to, then I will have more pain in my lower back and my hip than I normally would because I'm inflamed.
Okay.
So there's that.
So like with LS, I know a lot of women tell me that they're using the steroid, but they're still having pain. Some of them is chronic pain in the vulva, in the pelvic area. And the clobetasol or the whatever steroid they're using is not giving them any kind of relief.
Yeah.
You're saying by doing these tests and finding these triggers that, along with the other two stools, the other two legs of your stools, that you can possibly help rid them of that pain?
Yeah, it depends on what's causing the pain, but oftentimes it's just a matter of systemic inflammation. If you're using the topical steroids, and there's nothing wrong with them, I haven't found anything in the literature in terms of they cause cancer and they blah, 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 blah. I haven't found any major side effects there. People sometimes just don't want to be on prescriptions, which I completely understand. But if you're using those, they're only taking care of the topical area. So they're suppressing the immune reaction in the skin where you're putting them and then addressing the inflammation there. But what you're missing is the systemic inflammation from inside the body that's happening everywhere else. So it may be the case, and I've seen this a lot, where the steroids will handle the skin, the itching, the inflammation on the outside of the vulva, but penetration for intercourse is still very painful. Like that, that like searing, stabbing with a knife feeling when your vaginal opening doesn't want to stretch. And so that might be the difference. If you are having that kind of pain, definitely look into oxalates. In my experience, there seems to be a correlation between oxalates and painful intercourse.
Oh.
I mean, and that's what's great about this approach is you can experiment on yourself. You can say, I know that I use toxic cleaning supplies in my home. Let's switch them out with something that's less toxic and see if it helps. And then you just go box by box and you investigate each of these areas and you start to eliminate things. And every one of these are going to take stress off the body, which then takes stress off the immune system. Once the immune system can breathe, then function starts to go back to normal and then your symptoms will abate with LS.
And if we're testing for ourselves, how long would you say, okay, eliminate this so you can get a real clear, definitive yes or no?
Yeah, I would definitely give the body about 4 weeks to acclimate and get rid of each of these things. And it's up to you. Some of my clients, they look at all the boxes and they're like, I'm just going to go balls to the wall and get rid of everything all at once and make all these changes because I can't handle it. Some clients are more like, I want to know exactly what it was. So they'll go box by box and start checking stuff off. Okay. It depends on how much pain they're in, how desperate they are, and what they've already done to try and help themselves.
Got
it. I was going to talk about specifically what I focus on in terms of nutrition. So this is the overall just autoimmune approach that I take, is looking at all of these environmental triggers and figuring out what they are for an individual client. And I do a lot of that through lab tests. Some of the things, because I've had so many clients now, I can make correlations based on just their intake paperwork. So if you give me a list of like your history and where you've been and lifestyle and food journal, then I might be able to identify patterns and just be like, okay, let's try shifting these things around and see how you feel. And then sometimes we do labs, sometimes, most of the time we do both. Okay. But when it comes to nutrition, I'm specifically looking to optimize kind of five areas. The first is digestion. because if you aren't digesting your food correctly, then you're not getting the nutrients that you need. And like, it's all downhill from there. So that nutritional deficiency bucket is going to be out of whack if your digestion is off. So if you don't have enough hydrochloric acid, for example, then you can't sanitize your food, you can't break it down, and then you have issues further downstream. If your food passes through your stomach and into your small intestine without being broken down correctly, that's when bacteria can start to feed on it more than it would, because now your bugs in your gut have to do your digesting for you because the stomach didn't do its job. And okay, you could end up with stuff like small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, which is another bacterial issue that I run into quite often. So digestion is huge.
I've heard that we got to chew our food very efficiently.
Yeah.
That helps with digestion.
Absolutely. So sitting down to eat and making sure that you're not like in a stressed state, like running around rushing. I see this with moms of little ones all the time. Mm-hmm. Moms have a tendency to eat their dinner while they're cooking and serving other people. So they're not sitting down. Your nervous system has a couple of different states. One is a parasympathetic, which is when you're quiet and you're able to rest and digest. The other mode is sympathetic, when you're stressed out and you're doing stuff. When you're in a sympathetic nervous system state, all your digestive resources are on pause. So you're not making digestive juices, you're not producing HCL. It's like on pause, because if you're stressed, the body wants you to have all of your resources available to fight or flight. So if we don't sit and relax and breathe and smell the food and look at the food and chew the food, it's not going to be digested to where it needs to be when it gets to the small intestine, and then your bacteria have to do it for you.
Okay.
So it's a big deal. The next area is blood sugar regulation. Okay. This is huge. This is what is usually responsible for any kind of hormonal disrupt or endocrine problems, because your adrenal glands are overcompensating when you have blood sugar disruption. Because if your blood sugar is up and down, your adrenal glands are actually kicking in to help you produce sugar when you have those lows. So if I have a donut and I put too much sugar into my blood system, it's actually toxic. And so your body has to pull it into your fat cells, get rid of it. And then you drop too low. Like it just pulled too much too fast because there was so much there.
Okay.
And then your adrenals have to kick in and help you to produce more sugar to release it from where it was stored to bring you back up. So making sure it's balanced is a big deal. So okay, I always tell folks, don't ever eat carbohydrates by themselves.
Oh, okay.
Don't eat them by themselves. If you're going to have an apple, have some peanut butter or some cheese with it, if you can tolerate those things. If you're going to have bread, make sure you have protein in there. Make sure you have like a sandwich. Okay. So just try not to eat carbs by themselves. That will slow the release of the glucose into your system and help balance things a little bit better.
Got it.
Whether or not carbs are good or bad, that's specific to the individual. So I use metabolic typing to figure out if you need more protein or more fat or more carbohydrates. Every single person is different.
Okay.
And then hydration is another area that I look for. I mean, make sure you're well hydrated. One, because the lubrication in the vaginal area is important. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but if you're dried out and you have LS, it's even worse. So just in terms of managing symptoms, you want to make sure that things are healthy and hydrated. And then hydration also has to do with your movement of your hormones in your bloodstream, making sure things can move around, and also producing hydrochloric acid.
Oh.
So two more buckets I look at. One is fatty acid balance. So when it comes to inflammation specifically, and this is super relevant for this audience, inflammation is driven by these things called prostaglandins. You got PGE 1, 2, and 3. Two of them drive inflammation up and one drives inflammation down. Mm-hmm. Remember, inflammation is important for healing. If we get a cut, a scratch, a broken bone, whatever, that area gets inflamed because that's rushing in to heal it with nutrients and blood flow. But if it's just turned on and you're inflamed all the time, that's right, when we run into issues, and that's when the immune system can get confused.
Okay.
So the thing that drives these prostaglandins are actually fatty acids. And this is where the ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 are really important. It's normal for us to have more omega-6 than omega-3. Omega-3 is like fish, salmon, mm-hmm, seaweed, that kind of stuff. And omega-6 are like vegetable oils, seed oils, those types of things.
Okay.
Just for ease. The American diet, because it's so heavy in all these industrial oils, are really high on omega-6. And We don't eat a lot of fish and stuff, so it's really low on omega-3. So if you have, if you're out of whack in terms of that ratio, you will be constantly inflamed on a regular basis. So fatty acid balance is really important. So if you don't eat fish, try and find an omega-3 supplement.
Okay.
Some people don't want to do the fish oil because you get burps. That's fine. There are vegan options that are made from seaweed. You can try that. There's a lot of different options for omega-3s.
Is there a certain amount? Like, I literally don't eat any fish except for maybe a can of tuna, maybe once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks.
Sure. I would shoot for 4 grams if you are inflamed. So if you are inflamed or you have a high CRP like you do, 4,000 milligrams a day of an omega-3 supplement.
Okay.
Yeah. But any omega-3s that you can get in are good. And then also maybe cut down on the other things. If you start to look at just getting rid of junk food, you'll eliminate a lot of those oils.
Yeah. I don't need too much junk food, but I do eat a lot of processed food. I mm-hmm. take out a lot.
Yeah. So. Make sure you're cooking with animal fats, cooking with olive oil. Those types of things will help.
Okay. So not corn oil,
peanut, vegetable, all those things are not good for cooking. They're actually not supposed to be heated. So I would get rid of all of those.
Did not know that.
Go old school like grandma. Bacon grease, man.
Wow.
Any kind of animal fat is great to cook with. Avocado oil is good, but avocado oil is also high omega-6. A lot of folks that are in the holistic groups and they're following AIP, they're like, all these seed oils are not good. And so I'm going to use avocado. It's good. But then you're heavy on the omega-6. So you can actually just replace it with the same thing on accident. It's a healthier oil for you, but it's higher profile omega-6. Interesting. So be careful. Okay. And then this is where the whole grass-fed thing comes in. Like, it's up to you. Do the best you can in terms of what you can afford. But if you switch to grass-fed animal products, those tend to be a higher omega-3 profile than omega-6. Okay. All animals have both, but grass-fed tend to be heavier on omega-3 than non-grass-fed. And then the last bucket is mineral balance, like we talked about with yeast infections, the copper and the zinc.
Okay.
And if those things are out of whack, then you're going to see issues with endocrine, immune, cardiovascular, detox, and those are really what's going to get you in trouble. So when it comes to nutrition, that's what I'm focusing on. It's not about follow AIP, follow keto, follow paleo, carbs are bad. Like, it's not about that. It's about where are you and what do we need to build for your plan?
That's amazing. So it's super individualized. It's super looking at you. There's no two plans really that are really correct. The same. And so when we're working with you and you've done all the tests, you say, okay, this is what's going on with this person. Now you say, like a health coach, are you telling us, okay, this is what you need to do to cut this out? Or are you just giving us a report and saying, okay, here's your results, and read each paragraph and go about making
good luck.
Yeah, good luck. See you in a year when you want to get tested again.
No, I'm super hands-on. We do the intake paperwork and it's pretty intense intake paperwork. I ask you a ton of questions in terms of where you're at. And we actually come up with a score of where you are currently that we can then measure against later so we can see your health improve. And that score will come down. So we do all the intake paperwork and then we figure out based on that paperwork and some meetings with you, which labs may be appropriate. And of course, budget is always a factor. We get the lab samples sent in, get the results back. I go over them with the doctors on my end, and then I put together a plan for you.
Okay.
And I call it a DRESS protocol. And it's DRESS because it's an abbreviation. So I'm looking at diet, rest, exercise, stress mitigation, and supplementation, strategic supplementation. And so the plan that I put together will take all of the information we've collected, including your goals, whatever they may be, because sometimes it's not just, I want my LS to stop. I also want to lose weight, or I want to feel better, or I want my anxiety to come down, or whatever it is. There's always multiple things. Mm-hmm. Then I wrap all that up into your plan. And then I provide you with, here's the protocol that I would recommend. Here's a step-by-step. If it's very heavy in terms of rearranging your nutrition and your diet, there's usually recipes that come along with that or recommendations like food lists. If you're currently eating a lot of those seed oils, then I have, here are the fats I'd like you to switch over to so we can start to bring that inflammation down.
Got it.
And then from there, we meet on a regular basis. And I do a lot of therapy for folks. I get a lot of tearing hair out, and this is so hard. And I didn't think that this was going to be so intense. And unfortunately, for some people, depending on how bad the case is, there's a lot of change required. Like this approach, it's intense. It's a lot of work. You got to be ready to make the changes.
So you got to be ready to commit and yeah, make those lasting changes, because you don't want to spend all this time, all this money making all of these changes. And then in a year or two, you could fall back and then you end up right where you are and you better.
Yep. Yeah, you do. We all know better, right? We all know.
Yes, I know I should be eating fish and I should be exercising. I just choose not to. Right.
Yeah. We all know that we end up with a chronic illness, including autoimmunity. We absolutely contributed in some way.
Yeah.
And so that was a big piece of my healing journey, actually, was understanding how I contributed to my disease and forgiving myself for that. Not just because I didn't know better, but in a lot of cases, I did know better and I did it anyway. Like I knew I was allergic to dairy and gluten for a long time and I ate it anyway. Pizza, right. Donuts, cake. I know that stuff's not good for me, regardless of my food sensitivities.
Right. Yeah.
So of course, my body got pissed off.
Heather, this has been amazing. And tell us once again about the trigger sheet that you set up for us.
So you can find it at heathercohen.com/LS podcast. My last name is COOAN. So heathercohen.com/LS podcast. My website is there. You can find all of my stuff there. If you want to book a free consultation with me and chat through all of this stuff and see if I can help, there's a form there for you to do that. Otherwise, I'm available on all social media. I love to chat, reach out, no problem. And I hope this helps somebody. I hope you guys can figure out what your triggers are. Sometimes there's more than one. They're not the same for everybody. So it's not an easy thing to figure out.
Absolutely. So definitely head over to heathercohen.com/LS podcast. Take the test, find out what your triggers are, what your potential triggers are, and then book your consultation with Heather and see what she can do for you, because honey knows her stuff, and this is a lot going on here, and I'm about to go get me some vitamin D.
Yeah, okay? Vitamin D is important. But even if you don't book with me, hopefully this was helpful and folks can start to go on their own investigative journey to get to the root cause of their illness.
Absolutely. So thank you once again for your time, your knowledge. This has been amazing.
Yay. No problem. Happy to share.
Oh my God. She had so much information packed into this episode. I literally have a book of notes. So I know I got to get my vitamin D tested and I know I got to get my omega-3s up. But, oh, hello. I learned so much today and I hope you did too. So DM me on Instagram or email me, Kathy with a K at Lichen Sclerosis Podcast, and let me know, what did you learn? What was that light bulb moment for you in this episode? Because I know there were so many. But definitely go to Heather's website, take that test, find out whereabouts your triggers might be, and you know, schedule a consultation with her. It's free. And at least even if you don't book with her, you'll be able to be led in a direction that might, you don't know, might be the next stepping stone for you. Get your team looking into that area. Talking about teams, I want to make sure you know about the Lichen Sclerosis Support virtual meetups. We meet every other Saturday from 2 to 4 and 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's an easygoing way for you to come meet other LS warriors and talk about what's going on with you, your symptoms, how you're treating, get some tips, get some tricks, ask some questions. We're all there to support each other, to learn from each other, and just be together. There's an ease. There's a comfort of just being around people that understand what you're going through. And it just makes your week just go just a little bit better. So sign up at lssupport.net/connect and get updates and notifications sent right to your email. Talking about the Lichen Sclerosis Support Network, be sure to follow our sister blog, The Lost Labia Chronicles. Jacqueline's last post was all about checking her vulva compulsively. If that's something that you've experienced or experiencing now and you want to know how she was able to get over it, you definitely want to go to lssupport.net/join TLLC and get notifications and get that blog post. LS Support Network has a lot of new projects in the works and they'll slowly be coming out in the next few months. So make sure you sign up for the newsletter. Go to the website, lssupport.net, and find out all the information. So I hope you have an amazing week and I will see you next time.